Welcome to Insight Aviation, helping you to take a look inside the world of captains, aerospace professionals, air traffic controllers, and much more. Learn how they got started, where they are now, and their advice for aspiring aviators. This series is brought to you by Wayman Aviation Academy. Learn to fly with a safe, reliable, professional academy, located between Miami and Fort Lauderdale in sunny South Florida, USA. Enjoy the training and cosmopolitan life with Wayman's 42 aircraft, 6 airline partners, and 2 bases to help you be the captain. Welcome, everybody, to the Insight Aviation Podcast, where we meet with aviation professionals throughout the industry, airline captains, air traffic controllers, and in today's special case, we have a designated pilot examiner and a professor at Miami-Dade College of Aviation. Allow me to introduce Professor Tim Schmeltzer. Hello.
Hello. Hi. Hi, Eddie.
Why don't you give us a quick idea of just what you do and where you are today?
Okay. Like Eddie said, my name is Tim Schmeltzer. I'm a college professor at Miami-Dade College Iguatsu School of Aviation. And I've been here 25 years. And I have enjoyed that run for a long time. It's because I'm touching the lives of people like you that are out there interested in becoming an inspiring and in becoming an aviator. So we teach here in Miami, South Florida is training capital of the country, if not the world. It's a very busy spot, very good spot. We have the complex airspace. We have great weather, and it's a nice place to come to school. So furthermore, I'm work as a designated pilot examiner on behalf of the FAA, and I see what my product is out there and see what the students are doing and what they're not doing and using that to improve my product within the college classroom.
Excellent. That's quite a lot. And I know you had a busy day. You said you were flying this morning all the way up to Fort Lauderdale and then down in Tamiami for the afternoon, the evening classes.
Yeah, I'm a busy person, and that's the way I like it to be. I oftentimes I'm teaching 7 classes a semester, as well as doing a pilot exam each day, oftentimes 7 days a week, and it's with pleasure. I get to be in the lives of the people that are doing their very best and just encouraging them, as well as just trying to help them be sure they're safe. As a professor, I'm teaching, and as an examiner, I'm examining, and just making sure that the people aren't being certified without having the proper credentials and being safe.
And we're definitely going to get into that. For our audience, those of you in the Zoom and those of you that are watching on Facebook Live, please make a note in the chat, in the comments. I'd love to know where you are. Are you here in Miami, in Fort Lauderdale? Are you watching us from Europe or Bogota or India, wherever you might be? It kind of helps us direct our questions and answers. And so we're going to have a great conversation here with Professor Schmeltzer, Professor Tim, and then I would love to answer your questions as we get towards the end of our interview today. So please feel free to put them into the Q&A. And in the chat, let us know where you're from. All right? So hearing that we don't have audio, can anybody confirm we have audio? Let me check with Ian.
I hear you loud and clear.
And I hear you. So I'm going to say we have audio. Let's keep it going.
The video you played did not have audio. So keep that in mind. I don't know what
that's where the issue came from, because it's supposed to have audio. So let's start at the very beginning. So 25 years with the Iguatson School of Aviation. That's wonderful. It's a very historic institution. I believe it's been around since the 60s.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of DC-3s with the MDC logo on the side of it, right?
Yeah, Eddie, I'm 60 years old, so I don't quite go back that far. But no, we do have a rich history in Miami. We've been training pilots here since 1961. The college has been started in 1961, that time we were one of the first schools. And it started up in the Opa-locka area at the Opa-locka airport.
Yeah, from North Campus, right?
Yep.
And for those of you who don't know or not in the Miami area, Miami-Dade College is, I think, the largest country in the nation with 7 campuses and over 100,000 students, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where we stand, but I've heard that many times. We do have 8 locations, and we have, I think, 165,000 students. And it's a very, very big institution, of which aviation is just a small part of.
Tiny little part. And that's, kind of the good and the bad. I kind of say the same thing about Wayman Aviation, where you know, well, we've gotten significantly larger, right? But it's a kind of organization where we know everyone, we know all our students and all that, but we have these large resources of something like a Miami-Dade College or some of our other partners, our airline partners. So you have, you know, the School of Aviation is relatively small within this massive organization, but you have all the resources exactly. of such a big school, you know, the financial aid, the scholarships, and all these great things. Did you yourself attend Miami-Dade College?
No, I didn't. No, I went to school in Alabama at a place called Troy State University. I went to flight school before that up in Florida Institute of Technology in Melbourne.
All right.
And then I got my master's degree in Embry-Riddle.
Oh, beautiful. I did not know you were an Embry-Riddle grad. You know, we bleed blue and gold over here.
Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. My brother, vice president of Wayman Aviation, of course, he's the Broward Embry-Riddle alumni rep and takes every opportunity to go to Daytona whenever he can, relive his glory days. So take us back there. How did you get interested in aviation?
Well, to start back, as a kid, my family managed a cargo company who flew freight for General Motors. And I grew up at an airport and kind of just happened that way. And it was an operation back before UPS and FedEx got wound up. And what would happen is the General Motors, they would have a part shortage, let's say, from a carburetor up in Rochester, Minnesota, and they needed to get it to an assembly line. And we would go pick them up in Beechcraft Air 18, a big radial engine tailwheel. And so we had 13 of them, and we'd go pick that parts up and bring them over to the assembly plants. And we had a trucking company that would take it from the airport to the assembly plant. So that's how I got started.
13 Beech 18s. That's a significant operation.
Yeah. Well, it's an old school operation compared to what's going on today. But it was, you know, it was interesting. And that was quite a good freight hauler back in the day. Cargo doors and sliding pallets in there and go.
Nice. So you learned to fly right there on the field?
Yeah, I learned to fly. Started in Michigan and I finished in Ohio. And from there, I went to FIT in Melbourne.
Very nice. Very nice. You know, I find there's two kind of people that come into aviation, right? There's the people that grew up on the airport. I grew up on the airport, climbing the trees at Opa-locka Airport. And you know, people that might have had an uncle or a parent or maybe their parent worked at the airport or the flight attendant. You know, people that have like this connection in their back into it. And there's the people that just loved airplanes from a very young age, right? And always had the toy airplanes, flew RC planes, and then they kind of come into it. And they're both excellent ways, of course. But I see that kind of common trend. What was your favorite part in that training? Was it the independent flying up in Ohio and Michigan, or was it the more formal academy at Daytona?
The flying in Michigan, I was, you know, sitting oftentimes in the right seat of those airplanes in the cold winter, nasty weather. And I was going with the pilots that wanted somebody to be there unloading the airplane when they arrived and getting the fuel and so forth. And I remember those to be very powerful experiences and created who I am today. But I've always had good experiences in aviation and they're just different, you know, so I couldn't choose what's better, what's not. I mean, I would have never imagined that I would have been a college professor for 25 years. I never imagined when I got out of college that there would be no jobs deregulation and the market was flooded with pilots. But I ended up getting in aviation, but I worked up my way in the administration side in the airline business. And I ended up working for Pan Am up in New York until they went bankrupt. And so that's how I ended up here is because I had unfortunate times, and people don't understand this, the industry was very unstable and we've never seen it like it is today, and it looks very, very bright future. So but those were difficult times in aviation, and only the people that loved aviation survived.
That's true. So you were at Pan Am in New York, and like right above my gosh, it just blinked out of my head, the big Pan Am building right in the middle above Grand Central.
That was called the
above Grand Central, unless you were out at the airport.
Yeah, no, I was at the airport. I was out at Kennedy.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So that's actually a great place to start because people are concerned about today, right? The industry just went through this one-year pause, right? The whole world went through this pause. And a lot of people think, well, you know, should I call it quits? Is now a good time to get into aviation? But you've seen the ups and downs, and there's tends to be one about every, you know, 8 to 10 years. You've weathered those.
Well, I have so much to say about that, and I'll probably go crazy. But the most important thing is, it should not affect your decision, because your decision is going to be made internally. If you want to be a pilot, you're going to be a pilot, and there you'll find a way. So people start out and they say, oh, it's going to be difficult times. As soon as you reach a difficult time, they're going to go to business. And then when that happens, they want to be go into psychology. The fact of the matter is, this industry will be there for you if you're there for it. You have to be prepared and be marketable. You have to do what's necessary to get the job. There will be a job there. There's a lot. We know the numbers. The numbers are scary numbers for the people that own the airlines and the stockholders. Because where are we going to get the pilots? You know, they're saying, well, how can we plan? We're looking for pilots. And we're at the college here. There, everybody's wanting to partner up with us. How can we get a flow of your students? And they're speaking to you as well. Everybody around the world wants a pipeline of students. So I don't think that anybody should look at these downturns at all, other than an opportunity for you to be in a better position. Because the people that aren't sure about it are going to fall out. And that will make it even better for you. A lot of these airline captains says, listen, it's a great time for me to retire. Now they're gone. And so we've never seen this problem. This is a huge pilot shortage worldwide, and it's not going to get any better anytime soon, because you just can't produce pilots overnight.
No, you're absolutely right. And somebody made a really good comparison to the medical field the other day, right? You don't go into the medical field thinking about where medicine is today. You're not going to become a doctor for like 7-8 years, right? It's the same thing for a pilot, but I think the return on your investment is much sooner, right? If you look at the industry today, it's not perfect, but we know that within a year or two, there's going to be the pilot shortage has become much worse, and we'll be seeing it really kind of bare its teeth probably in about a year's time.
Well, right now, all of my people that are in often a lot of your graduates, they're being hustled right now, big time. Yep. And they're getting offers from many different airlines all at once. So one of your employees I can think of specifically, and one of the great instructors, she's got a job offer from two airlines, and she's calling me, Tim, which one should I choose?
Yeah,
and the way it is. And even though it might not be out there in the news right now, but I assure you, the current is really booming right now. They're trying to scramble. Airlines are saying, I need 5,000, you know, this and that by this time. They're hiring, I want a minority background. I would like this and that. They're trying their best to get whatever they can.
It's true. That's true. You're absolutely right. So we have 5 airline partners here at Wayman Aviation, and 2 of them have already called me like, hey, what's going on? In fact, this Friday, we have a visit from the American Airlines chief pilot who's going to come talk to our instructors and our students as well. American Airlines, of course, having the big base here in Miami for all of South America and the Caribbean. So he alone told me that they're hiring 300 pilots this year, right? And that's at the majors level, and the regionals right behind them are hiring up, because who's taking their pilots? It's the majors, right? So you're right. The pilot shortage came back quickly with a vengeance. So it's a great time to be into it, because if you're learning to fly right now, if you're just doing your first lesson, or maybe you're working on your instrument or your commercial, in about a year, year and a half's time, you're going to be at that point to be applying to the airlines. So it's a great time to get a start on it. But let's come back to it. So you have seen so much over your years. And so you told me that you graduated out of Embry-Riddle and the airlines weren't hiring at that moment. Deregulation, Eastern and all those, right?
Well, I graduated from Embry-Riddle once I went back. Once I lost my job with Pan Am, I had to get a master's degree to be a professor at the college. They hired me with my bachelor's degree and work experience. So I got my master's degree after I was a professor. So, but going to the time you were referring to, is when I got out of school, when I got out of my training, I had all my licenses and my certificates and ratings, and I had a 4-year college degree, but there was a lot of people out there that had a lot more. We'll never see that again. It was one of those things, but with work experience, with an education, there's a lot of jobs open up in this industry. There might be somebody here tonight that are saying, listen, I'm wanting to log in and listen to this presentation because I'd like to come to Miami and study aviation administration, of which you sent me a note from somebody that has mentioned that. So we have administration, we have pilot programs and everything else. So you find your spot. My spot is piloting, you know, and I love piloting, but there's other jobs there as well. But if you want to be a pilot, you just have to start bearing it, buckling down, you know, do what's required of you, plug into a school, for example, like Wayman, and they will guide you. They will give you the materials necessary, and you got to do the work. And you, it's not that you can't just sit there and expect it to happen to you. That's the unfortunate thing that I see as a professor. These people said they're a college student sitting in the classroom, but you're not a college student unless you're going through the work necessary to change your life. Mm-hmm. You need to plug in with a path, with a plan, and these people will put you in a program that works. And so when you're on your own, the difficult part of that, and some people do choose to try it on their own, it's very, very difficult. You get into a proven program, and it's like a current in a river, and you're jumping in and you're doing your part and paddling, keeping you off the banks of the river, but you're moving, and you have to move in those programs, and you have a stage check, and then you have the, you know, this, and then you have that, and then you're set up for your practical test and so forth. And then immediately you're in the next class for the next certificate. So I'm very high on the products that are coming out of the schools, in of which you are one of the best. So that would be my advice, is plug into a school.
I couldn't agree with you more. We actually had orientation this morning, about a half a dozen students, probably one of the bigger classes actually we've had considering the last year. And that's actually one of the things that I touch on in orientation, is that you've got a big goal, and that goal is to become a professional pilot, right? And aviation has a very winding path, right? You know, you talked about all the different ways you got to becoming a pilot. You know, we have students that jump from one school to another, an independent instructor, they're doing this and that. And so it's really easy to get lost in the woods working your way up to that mountaintop. And so I believe the purpose of a flight school or a collegiate program like your own is to pave a path right through the woods, right? To get you to the top of that mountain as quickly as possible, as safely as possible. And, you know, we're putting down brick by brick, we've made this path. What I find, though, is that we have lots of students who want to take shortcuts, right? Well, if I wander off the path and I cut over here, I can save an hour, I can save $100. And what happens? They end up tripping, get lost in the woods, and we got to go out there and bring them back in, if we can ever bring them back in, right? So I agree with you. While there's some great independent instructors, if you are career oriented, you got to hook up with a good FAA certified school, an academy, a collegiate program that really kind of provides the support network around you to get you there. Because it's not just, you know, putting in the hours in the logbook and passing a check ride. There's so much more to working in the aviation industry. The network, right? The networking is so important. The people that are in your ground school, sitting there at Miami-Dade College, you know, they could end up being your co-pilots, your chief pilot, the guy that gives you the connection to Atlas or Envoy or whatever it might be. It's so important.
I'd like to say Miami-Dade College is, the students are come from the salt of the earth. We have, I don't know how to say it, they're certainly not wealthy by any means. The best hardworking people that you'd ever want to meet. But I can say this, when I look at a class of 30 people or sometimes 40 people, I can assure you, I see hungry people, and these people will do it in spite of the fact they don't have any money. That's what I want to say to everybody out there. It doesn't take anything but the want to get this. So, oh, I don't have the money. Well, you can get the money. You can make the money. You can hustle and get out there and do what everybody else does. I have students that graduated from Miami-Dade College that are flying A380s, they're flying 747s, they're flying for the airlines all around the world. And they, I assure you, they didn't have any money. They had no money whatsoever, but they had the desire to do so. So if you don't think you can do it, that's the problem. You can, and you will, if you just get started. You got to jump into it. And if it takes a little bit longer, so what? You're doing what you want to do. And this is a big message I have, is you got to do it. You can do it. And you have no idea the relationship I have with these kids after I encourage them through those times where they didn't believe in themselves, and only for them to say, I did it, I can do it, and you can too. And there are going to be a guy here tonight in my class that will be speaking to the kids saying the same type of thing. So you guys, if you're not hearing that message, you can't do it. You're not talking to the right people. I assure you, it isn't easy. No one has it easy. Even the people that have the money don't. It is not easy, but they can do it, and you can too, 100%, guaranteed 100%. So be willing to do what's necessary to change your life. Don't sit there and hope. You got to do before you can be. So I am encouraging you to get going.
I like that. You got to do before you can be. That makes a lot of sense. You got to show up for life, right?
Exactly.
And I got to say, you're absolutely right. As I think back to all the wonderful Miami-Dade College students we've had over the years, we've been Miami-Dade College's flight training partner now for a little bit over 8 years. And I can think of plenty of students that the reason they joined Miami-Dade College is because they came from poor means, first generation Americans, you know, trying to make it here. And what's the biggest thing? And I see this constantly here in Miami, right? A lot of people, my first experience was that first flight when I came to the United States. I came with my family from Peru, from Colombia, from wherever it might be, on Eastern Airlines or American, wherever it might be. And that's kind of what inspired me. I've heard that story a ton of times. And so these first generation families breaking their backs. And yes, being a pilot is not a cheap career, right? But at the same time, it is very much on par with most professions, and you have amazing return on your investment, especially when you work with somebody like Miami-Dade College, which has gone out of their way to provide and to find and secure great scholarships for their students. And I'm constantly amazed how many people don't do the one-page essay that they need to get a scholarship from the Greater Miami Aviation Association, Ike Watson, or the Timothy Johnson. I always like to think back, and I tell the story all the time of Odie. I don't know if she's watching here today. I hope you are, Odie. But, you know, I know that her family pulled together and got her through her private pilot license, but she was so good at scholarships that I think just about everything else after that was covered in scholarships. Yeah. Even helping other people in scholarships.
So Miami-Dade College, Ike Watson School of Aviation, we have two of the scholarships Eddie was mentioning, and these scholarships were given by very generous aviators and very generous people that have endowed this program. And this lady that Eddie was talking about, she won four, I think, or three or four. Each one of them were eight or nine or $10,000. So she won probably about $30,000. Well, she didn't win. She was awarded it for her hard work. So there is money out there. The problem is people have to plug in. The problem is people have become conditioned to expect somebody to call you at home and say, this is for you. No, it isn't for you, but it's there for the work if you want it. You got to go out and get it.
Sure.
So I don't know where you're sitting right now, but I do know that if you have this burning on the inside that you want to be a pilot, well, let's get up and get going. You got a great spot here in South Florida, Miami-Dade College. Wayman Aviation's an excellent flight school, international flight school. I've been in meetings there with, you know, 200 people, and I've seen instructors that are just top rate. So you have places to plug in. So I'm encouraging you to believe in yourself. There's a famous scripture that I hear, I've heard, and I repeat oftentimes. You can do immeasurably more than you can ask or imagine according to the power at work within you. So let's get going. Let's believe in yourself. Step out there, get the book, get the videos. It's all free. Almost everything's online. And get going. And next thing you know, you'll say, man, I can do this. And plug in, call a provider, call the college, call Wayman, and get going. And literally don't believe this stuff. Oh, you'll never get that kind of money. Oh, you can never be a pilot. It's a very challenging job. You have to be perfect in math and all this stuff. I hear all that stuff. You know, isn't that amazing?
The glasses. I still hear the story that you need perfect vision. I'm like, well, you're not flying F-14s, you know, for the Air Force here. You can have glasses. I've had glasses since I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
Passion. It comes down to passion. You've got to want to be a pilot. You've got to want to put in the hours because it's not easy, right? It is early mornings. It is late flights. It's these 5-6 hours sweating it out cross countries.
Well, I don't know if you can say that, Eddie, because I think once these kids get in the airplane, you know, we hear the moaners, we've heard the complainers, and they're in every group. But 99% of these people are just jumping out of bed in the morning. Wilbur and Orville Wright said, I don't remember which one it was, but they said they get so excited that they can't wait to get out of bed in the morning. These people are jumping out of bed and getting going. These kids here at Wayman in these schools and the college, the ones that are going to make it are the ones that are just so excited and they can't get enough information. And if that's not you, maybe you need to get into an introductory flight. Maybe you go go over to Wayman or go to a local school where you are and get an introductory flight. And if that doesn't do it for you, well, maybe you're not in the right business. But I can't imagine you not just falling in love with it. Aviation piloting is very, very exciting. I mean, to see the view from what you see at that, it's unbelievable.
It's a daily challenge. It's something you learn about. It's physical, it's mental, it's spiritual. It's a great way to spend your days. Absolutely. So you have the right, that's the right track there with Discovery Flights. This is something that I share with absolutely everybody I meet. Every father, mother that comes in with a young daughter or son, I was like, have you done a Discovery Flight? You know, it's so you can do a half hour for like usually like $99. We do a full hour for $179. You fly down the beach. Go to your local airport, whether you are in Ohio or in Columbia, wherever you might be, if it's possible, if it's nearby. Just go and do that Discovery Flight. In that 1 hour, you'll know if you love it or you hate it, right? And if it's not for you, you get dizzy, motion sickness, things like that. For every pilot, there's 50 jobs in support, right? That's a number I got from Miami-Dade Aviation. For every pilot, there's 50 people in support. Operations, airport administration, scheduling, dispatchers, mechanics. It's a huge field to be in. Especially here in South Florida. For those of you that are joining us from South Florida, I was just part of a GMA conference call where they had, I think, the new mayor there, and she was saying that one in four jobs in Miami are directly or indirectly tied to aviation, right? That's the tourism, the cargo, the airport itself, the largest employer in the county, right? So Miami just lives and breathes aviation and has historically, right?
Yeah, so Miami-Dade College right here. I'm sitting right now at the Miami International Airport campus, right here on the west end of Miami International Airport. We also have a location, a facility down at the southwest Miami. It's called Miami Executive Airport, formerly known as Tamiami Airport. And we also have a facility that we partner up with the Wayman Aviation up in Opa-locka Airport. So We have a great spot for training, and Wayman offers a great program. We pair up with Miami-Dade College. So whether it's here or anywhere, plug in. There's a lot of different associations. You have the EAA, Experimental Aircraft Associations, the AOPA, Aircraft Owners and Pilot Associations. These websites are for you to get on there, free videos and free information. You can join this FAA safety team, and I'm an FAA safety team leader for 16 years. And I can assure you, plug into those things and they're free. And you're going to meet people that are very experienced pilots, very passionate about what they do, willing to help you in any way possible. Plug in. FAASafety.gov, great spot. AOPA.org, EAA.org. Those are three nice spots to start.
You know, it's an interesting time because, you know, back in the day, if you were interested in aviation, you had to go to the airport. You had to go hang out at the FBO, wash planes, you know, until somebody offered you a ride, basically, right? Go to the airplane spotter spots. But it's never been easier to go online and get information, right? This podcast coming to you, you might be going for a run right now or sitting in your car and, you know, hearing from world-class professionals. And I'm glad to say that I see them all the time, from Jason Shepard, and AOPA has some wonderful podcasts. It's never been easier to get that information and get started into it. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I also want to say shame on us, not me and Eddie, but shame on aviation in general. You know, since the terror attacks of 9/11, the fences got big.
It's true.
And they're shooing away people from the airport nowadays like they're criminals. And so we have a lot of room. We have a lot of work to do to start somehow making a bridge there. It's very unfortunate that these people only can go. They can't sit there and watch takeoffs and landings like we used to as kids. Eddie, and I'm sure his family and I did as growing up, just sitting there at the airport watching planes just take off and land. I take my little boy over to the runway, you know, only spot that I can find to see them, you know, doing such a thing. But we need to do more, and we need to do it earlier as much as we can. Certainly, Wayman Aviation is very involved in the SAFE, the big local bringing the children to the industry and so forth. So there are ways, and if you haven't found the ways to plug in, you're just not looking hard enough. There should be more, but they're out there.
You're right about the fences. I can't tell you how often I get a call like, oh yeah, just come and meet me. You know, here's the address. Like, is there security? Do I have to go through like a checkpoint? And I'm like, no, it's not Miami International. The vast majority of airports in the country, I'd probably say, you know, upwards of 90%, are general aviation airports where you can drive right in, visit the FBO, you know, visit a flight school. Miami International, Fort Lauderdale International, yes, they've got a lot of security, but even they have designated viewing areas where you can, you know, go take a sandwich and watch the airplanes take off and land. I love on the south side of Miami International. What is it?
El Dorado?
No, the restaurant.
Oh, 94th Aero Squadron?
94th Aero Squadron. What a great place. What a great place, right? You could just watch the A380s and 777s coming in and out all day long. That's a tradition of airplane spotting that I think really needs to be picked up. But you hit on something that actually lines up with a question in the chat from Alejandro here, asking about mentorship. You said about getting out there and meeting people that will give you a hand up. And he wants to know if you had any mentors coming into aviation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody, you know, when I look back at my life, you know, first, let me just say this. Everybody in life needs help at one time or another. Sure. And if you're not doing that yourself, that's very unfortunate, because I can't imagine where I'd be today if I didn't have people willing to go out of their way to help me. And I just am so grateful for the people that did that. I didn't have anybody. It pains me to think what happened to me early on in my life. If I would have had somebody, my parents kind of were of the school of just kind of, you're on your own, go do your stuff. And there's something to that. But there's also something, maybe they were too close to me for me to listen to them anyways. But if you get out there, I assure you will be inspired by these people out there, the lives that they've shared, and they can share with you that the lives that they've lived as a professional pilot, they're everywhere. And these people won't shut up. They'll tell you so much about it, and they're willing to help you. And oftentimes, many of these people have airplanes of their own. And, oh, come on over on the weekend and so forth. We fly here, and oftentimes they're going to have this Taco Tuesdays is a lot of
very popular.
Yeah, a lot of these groups are going to fly to a local airport, you know, not local, maybe an hour away to get a taco or something like that. So I did have mentors, but I didn't have somebody like I feel that I'm offering right now, because I'm the kind of guy that I'll grab a hold of somebody. I'll say, listen, you're not doing it. You know, I'll tell it like it is. I don't soften it all. I mean, matter of fact, I'm very blunt about it. I tell these people, you're not doing the exercise necessary to change your life. And until you do, you're just making excuses. And that's very sad. And I don't want them to live their life that way, because they go from 19 and 23 and next thing you know, they're 31 and they're still struggling. Well, because they didn't get to work.
Yeah.
So I did have mentors, but I didn't have a college professor that was right there and telling me the way it is. And I feel that I'm doing that, and I'm getting a lot of feedback from it. And sometimes it's pretty powerful stuff. And I think we all need to be honest with one another and say, listen, right now, the way I look at it, you're failing miserably. And, well, really? Yeah. Oh, I got good grades. Well, you're not doing the things necessary to become a professional. You might have good grades, but you don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And things like that. So mentors are super, super important, and plug in. You know, I know you've mentored many, many people over the years, and the people I associate with also. College is full of, oftentimes it's a classroom where they're not so engaged, but I am. And the very best of the best are really wanting to know you and what your hopes and dreams are. And we're willing to do whatever we can to help you, you know, reach those dreams. So find a mentor. This is a time of year. I was wanting to say, this is a time of year that hopefully all of you guys have been applying for internships, summer jobs. Mm-hmm. The economy is, there's jobs everywhere. I in the elevator here at the airport, I see they're hiring fuelers, $500 sign-in bonuses and stuff like that. Wow. We've never heard of such a thing. And this is a job at the airport. The Miami airport is always hiring. Like Eddie Wayman says that, listen, there's one in four jobs are aviation related, directly or indirectly. I think there's 30,000 people working at Miami International Airport alone. There's so many jobs.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
I'm sorry for carrying on, Eddie. Please go ahead.
It doesn't matter if you're handling baggage. Just being at the airport, showing up at the airport every day, smelling the jet fuel, it gets you going. And you're right about the fearless feedback. Sometimes you got to call people out, right? There's some very smart people that are taking their training, but they're not putting in the effort. Or maybe they have all the opportunities in the world, but they don't have that passion in them, right? And when you see that spark, when you see somebody that's really into it, man, that's the person you want to reach out and help. Like, what are you doing? Get going.
Yeah. You know, like I've said all to my students on every day, the first day of class, I said, it doesn't matter what you got. It matters what you want if you're willing to work for it. And I believe the people that are watching this are willing to work for it. I really do believe that. And that's why I'm here today, is because there is a way if you're willing to work. Now, that's why you plug into these podcasts and so forth. That's why you plug into these schools and the universities and so forth, because they, like Eddie Wayman was saying, they've created that pathway. It will help you avoid a lot of the pitfalls associated with, you know, trying to do it on your own. If it was easy to do it on your own, everybody would do it. There, these facilities are there for a reason. They serve you, and it's super, super important. Will you pay 10% more? Maybe. But if you study before every lesson, I can save you 30% of these dollars that you're hearing up there. Everybody says, oh, it's so expensive. Well, just do your part and you can save a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Being prepared is the most important thing you can do as a student, as a pilot. Being prepared is just built into the DNA. We pre-flight, we flight plan, we check the weather. You've got to be prepared for your lessons, and that includes looking at your maneuvers and all that good stuff. Now, you mentioned EAA and AOPA. Are you involved with any of the pilot organizations, like the ones that are out there, OBAP, LPA, all these things that are out there?
Well, I've been a member of EAA and AOPA, of course, my whole life. As far as being involved, I can't say I'm involved with them as much as I am a member of the EAA chapter at Tamiami.
Sure.
I'm not actively involved with that because my activity is very fruitful within the college. And so that's where I devote my free time. I can find much more, I can find better ways to plug in, get my students plugged in. But I'm not saying they're not good. By all means, they're super good ways to get started. If you're at a small little town, you can join a local chapter of the Experimental Aircraft Associations. They've made their airplanes, they're flying every day. These guys are my age, and they would love to share with you what they did building their airplane. They'd love to share with you that empty seat. Oftentimes, these guys are lonely. Maybe their wife doesn't like to fly. I don't know, but they're constantly looking for somebody. Hey, let's go fly. I'll be glad to take you.
There's a ton of organizations out there. EAA is definitely the biggest. Along with AOPA. So what I mentioned there was the LPA, Latino Pilots Association, OBAP, Organization for Black Aerospace Professionals, the 99s for women, and of course, women in aviation. But there's some that are a lot more local, like the Florida Aero Club does a really good job of organizing flyouts to get Taco Tuesdays or to go get a hamburger or a pancake breakfast somewhere. And I know that the president of the local chapter, he's been doing was have a bunch of young people come over, wash the plane, and you get a ride. Like, that's the way to do it. Yeah,
that's definitely a way to do it, you guys. If you want to be a pilot, do what pilots do. Hang out at the airport. If you hang out at the airport, I can assure you those opportunities will happen. The best place to go to a local airport and just say, hey, listen, I'm interested in flying. Okay, well, let me tell you about this. And they'll sit you down. They'll walk you through that play. But I don't have any money. That's okay. We would love to share with you what we do. Mm-hmm. And it goes from there. So if you stay at home and you do nothing but play with those games, I find it to be a big problem that these people are, I got my flight simulator game. Well, great. That's great. And it doesn't help you as much as you would think initially. It will help you later on. But get plugged in for an introductory flight. Get plugged in a private pilot course. Get that pilot certificate, the first certificate, the private pilot. And then that instrument training, that flight simulator will be priceless. But, you know, if you're sitting there and, I'm just practicing on my flight simulator, well, it's better than nothing. But it's not as good as it could be. Get plugged into these schools and get going on the private certificate, and then that stuff will kick in even more so later on. What's your point of opinion on that, Eddie?
Well, no, I agree. I think flight simulators are a great way to get into it, especially when I see younger people, you know, 13, 14, still too early to get into an airplane, but they spend their time there. I always refer them to Civil Air Patrol, to those kind of things, just to kind of be around airplanes. But I'd love to switch gears a little bit because you've been a professor now 25 years, Miami-Dade College. I'm sure probably thousands of students have come through your classroom that are successful in all different kinds of way in aviation. But over the last few years, you took on a new challenge of being a pilot examiner. Right. What was that transition like? I mean, I'm sure it's very rewarding to see the other end of your training.
Yeah. Well, so a colleague of mine says, I see it full circle now, don't I? So I see him coming in as not knowing anything. And then I see him coming in professing to have what it takes to be a professional pilot. And so being a professor for 25 years, I know what they don't know. and I know it's usually the things they don't know requires a little bit of effort. They know the easy stuff. I love to encourage my students, say, listen, this is hard, but it's not that hard. You're going to need to know it. So get it now and spend the time now because you're going to be stopped, guaranteed, if you don't get it. So as an examiner, I'm excited when I see them come in, and I am excited and I know right where they are and I understand their emotions and so forth. And over these years, I've developed the ability to work well with somebody that's a young person trying to learn to fly and so forth. And I can encourage them. At the same time, I can also say that they're not ready.
Sure.
You know, so yeah. I'm loving this job because it's all about safety. I'm the last step in the safety chain, I guess it would be. The pilot instructor, the student pilot's instructor said, you are now acting as pilot command, and I'm sitting with that person as a private pilot, and he's exercising that privilege. And I'm just making sure it can fall within the standards that we've established to be safe. And so my pass rate is very high because of schools like Wayman Aviation that you guys have high standards, and you can't get through the different stages without being held accountable. Now, it doesn't mean somebody at one point or another won't get too nervous and not be able to perform real well. That happens. But most of the time, the students I get are ready, and they do well and they meet the standards. I don't expect them to be perfect. The FAA, we don't expect them to be perfect, but they fall within the aeronautical certification standards.
Yeah.
So oftentimes what I do find when they do fall short, it's oftentimes on things that are surprising. It surprises me to think that they don't know what if. You know, I would, when I'm an instructor, I want everybody to know, well, what would happen if, what would you do if this happens? Well, man, and if they don't know that, that's a concern for me. Oftentimes very simple things. Well, what would happen if the radio doesn't work?
That should be the pilot obsession, right? I mean, like, you get paid to land and take off. While you're flying, you've got to be thinking, what if this happens? Where's the nearest airport? What if that happens? What if this happens?
Yeah.
A constant thing going through a pilot's mind.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at that instrument panel and you can't tell me if that's working or it's not working, and you can't tell me what's wrong, I say to these people, it's really scary when something happens, but it's really, really bad when you don't know what to do.
That's
true. I don't want to say it's scary. It will get your attention if something goes wrong. But what's really bad is when you don't know what to do. I hear people saying, "Oh, my alternator failed, and I would have to make a forced landing because my engine will quit." So, you know, things like that. What if?
Sure.
What if? And your instructor should be saying, what if this happens and what if that happens? Because I don't want you making a landing in a field somewhere if your radio goes bad or if your alternator fails or things like that. So I really enjoy that to make sure that these people are safe. And I ask them, well, you know, this is not guaranteed to always work. What would you do if this happens? And I better hear them come right back. Well, we have the magnetos, that's the ignition system. We don't need the electrical system. We'll lose our radios, but our engine's going to run just fine, type of thing.
That's right. It's really interesting because, you know, examiners, I forget who it was described to me that examiners should have high pass rates. If you have an examiner with a low pass rate, that's where you have to watch out, because I had one examiner come to me. We had a string of students who just weren't cutting the grade, and he came to me, he's like, look, I don't come here to fail students, right? Like, what's going on? Let's get this fixed. And I thought that was a wonderful way to go about it, right? You're there to verify they're safe, that they've put in the time and the study, and they know their stuff, and you're just there to say, yeah, your instructor did a good job.
Yeah, that's a good point. At the end of these exams, we have that debriefing with the instructor. And oftentimes I'll seek out the chief pilot if I see something that's continuing more than once or twice. But 99% of the time, you solve it right there. After the exam, that you tell the instructor that this happened and the student was right there, and say, this is what felt, how, where they fell short of the standard. And the instructor says, well, thank you for sharing that with us. We'll fix this and so forth. It can happen. But what we're looking for is trends. And we speak those clearly to the schools and so forth to stop that and say, listen, maybe this class didn't get it for whatever reason. But you're right. When I get these people, a high percentage of the time, I see that they're doing great.
Have you ever had one of your former students, someone had ground school with you, Miami Dade College, and then in the oral, you're like, come on, we went over this.
Yeah, you know, I just, maybe a couple months ago, the guy was at a great school, mm-hmm. and I sat down with this kid, and he was an airframe and power plant mechanic.
Oh, nice.
And he did not know systems. And I said, buddy, I mean, this is what I say. Oftentimes the nerves just make people go blank. So I gave him credit for that. But yeah, I said, I know you're supposed to know this. I know you were taught this. So you're not getting by me on that one, because I shared it with you on several occasions. Not only do I have a theory class, but I have a lab class that follows that class, where we sit down hands-on and go through these things. And so he's seen it from me twice, and he's seen it from the instructor and so forth. So there's no, I don't have any, it's not hard for me to fail someone when they're not prepared, because I know their family would want it. I don't want to have that in my conscience. If they're not ready, they're not ready.
Right.
So, but it is a high percentage of the students that do pass.
Yeah, and they should. By the time they've gotten their instructor sign-off, you know, our instructors are super proud when they get their gold seal, because they've put in the work with their students to get them there, right? Gold seal, for those of you who don't know, mean you get 10 passes and you have to have your total pass rate, I think, above 90%, 80%, I forget right now. But it's a great goal for every instructor to have. And so we've got some interesting questions as we're coming to the end of our hour. Steven over here wanted to know as an examiner now, if you're seeing any trends, anything that your typical private pilot kind of needs to focus on?
Well, I certainly see a real big one, and it's a part of my exam where I really have to drive home how important personal weather minimums are. Remember, you will get a certificate, and the instructor will know that he is no longer going to be there to watch over you and care for you and help you make the decisions. And so what I'm looking for when you come to see me is I'm looking for somebody that's very decisive. Here's my personal weather minimums. I can't fly today. What do you mean you can't fly? Well, because I have determined that with this much experience right now, my crosswind component is 8 knots and it's 12. Or my ceiling should be 4,000 and right now it's not. You know, and things like that. I really want to see somebody that's going to be responsible for their decisions. And I don't see that so much. And it's not from, it's something that I talk to the instructors about. It's getting much better. Other things, trends. I couldn't say it's a trend, but what really, really bothers me is fixation into the cockpit.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really big concern of mine. We're in a very complex airspace down here, very good place to train because of that, but you have to be looking out the window. This is a private pilot check ride I'm giving, and if you're not looking out the window, I don't think you're safe. And they're looking at this, they're looking down there, they're looking at their heading, and they're looking at their altimeter, and I commend them because they're trying to do real well, but you're not, you're dangerous. And if an instructor is allowing you to do that, they are dangerous. You know, it's a habit that forms early on, and it's very hard to break. So we're looking reference to the horizon. We're looking outside. We're doing clearing turns, and we are being very safety conscious. So those are two things right off the bat that come to mind. That bothers me. That really, really bothers me.
You know, that makes me think. I'd love to get your take on everyone's favorite EFB for flight, right? It's become like a standard tool in the cockpit. We use it extensively here, but I find that when I fly with it, especially immediately around the airport, it gives me anxiety because I see all the TCAS, I see the traffic, right, on there. You see the traffic on your GPS, and it's almost easy to kind of get distracted from that rather than looking outside. There's all these airplanes flying around you.
Well, you know, I kind of must admit, I learned a lot from you years ago. I don't remember how it came out. I think it was, I don't even think you said it directly to me. And I think it was more so what you were teaching the students at Wayman. And just due west of the Opa-locka facility in the Hollywood North Perry facility that you have your operations,
sure,
there's a practice area. And this practice area is, like you were just saying, is full of traffic.
Busy.
And when you look at, if you got your head down and looking at your iPad or your phone or whatever the case may be, you know, they show, you know, your ring might be 2 miles, 5 miles or something like that. So are there in your ring? Yes. And should that alert you? Just maybe so, but it's only for a split second. Don't try it. I don't even want you to really use that as very much as you probably are. Because I really want you to say, okay, I see that person there and I see that person there. And maybe if it vibrates on your leg and it would give you something or goes to your headset, maybe a quick glimpse down to where you should be looking if you didn't see it, something like that. But there is good and bad in that. Oftentimes I see people having to put, they have to tell the tower that they're 8.5 miles southwest. I mean, really? You know, and so forth. So I think it goes a little bit too far. But as you progress off from the private up into your instrument training and so forth, it becomes a more powerful resource to have. But you have to remember where you are in your training. But a private pilot certificate is visual. It's nothing but looking outside the airplane.
That's true. And sometimes I encourage people to, you know, as great of a learning environment as South Florida is because of our Bravo airspace, I encourage you to go out there and, you know, try glider flying, right? I remember I got my seaplane rating in a Piper Cub, no radios at 500 feet, right? It's a totally different kind of flying, right? Like you're almost off the grid. It's really interesting. And I remember my brother was big on taking people, this is way back in the 90s, taking people down to Homestead to fly gliders. I think right before or right after their solo, because he just thought it was really important for them to not just experience the silence, but the really feel the wind, right? And what happens in a real stall, and to use that stall like glider pilots do. I haven't had a chance to do that. Shout out to Captain Nelson. He was telling me to go up to Vero Beach and do some glider flying with him. I think I'm going to have to take him up on that. Yeah. Have you gotten out of the mainstream into kind of like quirky flying?
Well, I too got my seaplane rating like you. A lot of fun flying. I like flying tailwheel airplanes. Certainly, I haven't. That's a problem where I'm trying to resolve. Matter of fact, I'm wanting to be able to offer more of that. And I have, matter of fact, I'm sitting next to one of the sharpest students I ever had. He's here technically helping me do this. Thank and you. He's helping me. Yeah. He's helped graduate of the program and he's helping me create a way so I can offer rides, not for charge, you know, not for that, but just to get somebody to see this quirky stuff where you can, That's kind of the things that set the sparks off when the kid gets in an airplane that's open cockpit. Wow. Yeah. You know, stuff like that's like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. So, yeah, I do. And I did, fortunately, when I was growing up at the airport, I had all those opportunities to fly. You know, matter of fact, when I was in college in Alabama, my boss had all old warbirds I got to fly. Nice. Everything except his P-51. So, I got to fly almost everything. So I'm very fortunate that way.
Yeah, that's one of the things, again, getting out of the immediate airspace. When you join these clubs and you're flying out to Arcadia and Winter Haven and LaBelle, every little hangar has like some beautiful airplanes, like Wacos and Pitts and all sorts of interesting flying out there. I feel like when you're in the flight school environment, yeah, it's a bunch of Cessnas and Pipers and you get lots of time on them. They're very reliable. They're great training aircraft. But the true aviators, when I see a resume and it says on their seaplane rating, tailwheel endorsements or glider, I'm like, okay, you're not just a pilot. You're an aviator. You're really getting into this.
Yeah. Flight training, if you don't keep your situational awareness, you can get pulled into it. It could almost at a point drive the fun out of flying. Because you didn't manage it. Like he said, like Eddie was saying, you have to go plug into those other parts of flight. Flight training can be challenging and you are doing what you're told to do and you're doing lessons. And oftentimes you want to have the freedom to do whatever you want to do. Well, plug into, like Eddie Wayman was saying, plug into those things that you can plug into on the weekends. Maybe pick up a seaplane rating, maybe just fly in the back seat of somebody flying that has a cool airplane at the local airport.
That all comes from hanging out at the airport, right? That's what it comes down to. Go hang out at your local airport. Tim, we're kind of coming to the end of our hour. So I'd love to know, how can people reach out to you or learn more about Miami-Dade College's aviation program?
Okay. Certainly you could. My email is tschmelz, it's tschmelz@mdc.edu. You could also look at the Miami-Dade College website and look at the Ike Watson School of Aviation and find all of us in there. I don't know. I'm willing to help anybody. Other than that, I give my students my phone number. I'm afraid if I gave it to this, the thousand people that are watching this would.
Your email's already probably going to blow up. But I would suggest everybody, I believe it's mdc.edu/aviation, but just Google MDC, as in Miami-Dade College, and aviation. You're going to come right to the Miami-Dade College School of Aviation's website, right? And you'll be able to see, yes, it is mdc.edu/aviation. I just checked it. It's a great historic program. Pilot program, maintenance program, airport management program. I know I'm missing more, right? You've got logistics.
We have an air traffic control program that the controllers are, you know, filling the whole towers of the United States. It's a great place to plug into. We have international students, as Eddie Wayman knows, oftentimes they're coming from one of your programs. So Miami-Dade College is a great place to start if you're wanting to get an education. We strongly recommend it because these airline pilots do require a degree. The regional airline pilots don't. So eventually it will probably get more and more competitive in the degrees. The degree is super important anyways. It really will make you more respected in the industry.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going for the majors, if you want to be that chief pilot, the head of operations, you got to have the degree with you. And a lot of people that want to be pilots, they think they're going to go into being a pilot because they don't want to go to college. But guess what? Everything you study, it's airport operations. You take a class on aircraft systems. You take a class on regional operations. So, you know, no one's going to make you read Russian literature here. You're reading about planes, right? So it's a great career to pursue. The collegiate path is wonderful. Miami-Dade College and many local colleges across the country have them. It's not just Embry-Riddle and University of North Dakota. Your local college very likely has an excellent aviation program, very often more accessible. You don't have to move halfway across the country. And, you know, here we have a perfect example, a little jewel within the Miami-Dade College system, which has provided so many. You spoke about your air traffic control program. Of course, the former director of the tower was a Miami-Dade College graduate. So I think that's wonderful. And you will find a Miami-Dade College graduates throughout the entire aviation industry here in South Florida. Tim, I'm so happy to join that you were able to join us. You've got a great energy and a great message for everyone looking to get into aviation. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure, Eddie, and God bless you and your family. Thank you very much.
And you. Blue skies to everybody out there. Get out there, fly, get a discovery flight. Thank you for joining Insight Aviation today. This series is brought to you by Wayman Aviation Academy. Learn to fly with a safe, reliable, professional academy. Located between Miami and Fort Lauderdale in sunny South Florida, USA. Enjoy the training and cosmopolitan life with Wayman's 42 aircraft, 6 airline partners, and 2 bases to help you be the captain.